High in the Pyrenees, in the southwest of what is now France, in a time when the Church of Rome proclaims itself the one true religion, heresy has taken hold. The Pope sends the inquisitors of heretical depravity to exterminate the heresy. Unbelievers are hunted down, condemned, and burned. In 1308, the entire village of Montaillou is taken prisoner of the Inquisition. No one is safe. Not even the village priest and the chatelaine of its castle. From the secret files, the extraordinary revelations of village life under the Inquisition. On the slopes of the Pyrenees in what is now southern France, the autumn of the year 1308 is bountiful, warm, and calm. This is the region of the Languedoc, the fabled Occitania, land of the troubadours and the romantic tradition of courtly love. The domain of independent shepherds whose flocks migrate with the seasons, hardy men like Pierre Maury, fiercely protective of their liberty. But Pierre Maury's freedom and the tranquility of his beautiful mountain homeland are in their final hours. When two travelers appear, Pierre Maury knows immediately who they are. Apostles of an alternative Christian sect that has captivated the people of this region through more than 100 years of secrecy and persecution. Wandering ascetics known as les parfaits, the good Christians, or simply, the good men. The visitors are the brothers Pierre and Guillaume Autier. They are the last prelates of a faith without cathedrals, bishops, or treasure. The touch of their hands is their only sacrament, and the bread blessed by them is considered sacred. Their followers will keep it for the rest of their lives. From the transcript of Pierre Maury.
They do not lie. They do not take what belongs to others. Even if they found gold or silver lying in their path, they would not lift it unless someone made them a present of it. Salvation is better achieved in the faith of these men called heretics than in any other faith.
At one time, there may have been as many as 1,000 good men scattered across what is now southern France and northern Italy. Their belief is called Catharism. They seem to echo ancient Asian concepts of dual creation. Only the spiritual realm is the handiwork of God, the good men say, while everything else, the physical world of men and women, sex and labor, churches and priests, is Satan's manufacture.
the denial of the goodness of creation, the denial of the goodness of marriage. I mean, there were all kinds of elements in Catharism which were truly not only alien, but contrary to Christianity in a fundamental way.
To the Roman Catholic Church, the good men are traitors, heretics who might poison others with their beliefs. The Otier brothers are on their way to the village of Montaillou, an isolated hamlet of laborers, farmers, and weavers, without a single horse or wheeled cart. Only a handful of the people can read and write. Montaillou is the last stronghold of the Cathars.
Montaillou was fertile territory for the converts for a number of reasons. To begin with, the Chatelaine, who was the noblewoman of the village, warmed to the faith quite early on. Also, the Catholic priest, Pierre Clergue, was sympathetic to the faith as well.
From the earliest files of the medieval Inquisition comes the tale of a dangerous liaison between an aristocratic widow and a treacherous priest. A tale of heresy, condemnation, and shame. Pierre Clergue is the village priest and the village Casanova. Clergue has sworn to debauch every woman in town. He has spent months courting this potential lover, the wealthy widow Beatrice de Planisot, the chatelaine of the castle of Montaillou. From the transcript of Beatrice de Planisot.
I said to him, "How can we do such a thing in the church of Saint Peter?" He replied, "Oh, what a great shame it will be to Saint Peter." They said, "We placed ourselves on the bed and slept together in the church."
Even the most personal and private moments of the villagers of Montaillou will be exposed. There will be no secrets from the Inquisitors. The last stronghold of the gentle Cathar heresy is about to suffer the full and terrible vengeance of the Holy Inquisition.
The judgment that the church made about Catharism or Albigensianism was that the doctrines taught by the Cathars were in fact absolutely, that there was no form of Christianity which could encompass those doctrines.
The Roman Catholic Church has been the only legitimate religion tolerated in the European kingdoms for nearly 700 years. With Europe slowly emerging from the Dark Ages, the people have been loyal only to their immediate community and to God, the keeper of God's word being the Catholic Church. But the church is losing control over these people. The peasants understand little of the rituals of the church. Their service is in Latin, a language they neither read nor understand. The priests command everything there is to do. For the peasants of Montaillou, the Catholic religion is a series of laws they must obey and fines they must pay. Some are disillusioned with the priests, feeling that they are more concerned with collecting taxes for the church than with saving souls for God. Even Cathars accept Holy Communion from Pierre Clergue. They have been taught by the good men that a little biscuit never did anybody any harm. From the transcript of Pierre Maury.
No one should say our father except our lords, the good men who are on the path to truth. The rest of us, when we say the Lord's Prayer, sin mortally because we are not on the path to truth. For we eat meat and sleep with women.
One of the reasons why this heresy flourished when it did is because people were so yearning for a more direct relationship to the Gospels and to God. And the Orthodox Church at the time was unwilling to bend, to expand, to adapt, really, to the changing needs of the people.
A century earlier, well before the development of the nation state, the political boundaries of Europe in the 13th century are a patchwork of duchies, principalities, and fiefdoms, all owing fealty to Rome. But here, at the farthest extension of the Holy Roman Empire, Catharism has been so widely adopted that it threatens the Pope's hegemony.
We have to understand the political theory of the day. Heresy could become equated with treason to the state very easily because rulers took an oath to protect the church. And so any assault on the church could be deemed as an assault on the stability of government.
I have been given not only the universal church, but the whole world to govern.
Innocent III, at 37, the youngest pope in the history of the church, is infuriated by the reports of rampant heresy. He calls for a holy crusade, as righteous as the struggle against Islam. He entices and enlists the largest army the Western world has ever seen.
Attack the followers of heresy more fearlessly than even the Muslims. Since Christian heretics are more evil, their goods shall be taken and sold, their houses destroyed. The heretic shall be punished.
Innocent III's holy army lays waste to the land, killing and burning its way across the country. Entire villages are rounded up, tied to stakes, and burned. An estimated 2 million people died in the crusade against the Cathars.
The crusade itself was really not sufficient. You had to root out the heresy in people's minds and in their behavior. The Inquisition really comes because the papacy recognizes there's going to have to be an ongoing commitment to rooting out the heresy all over Europe.
In 1233, Pope Gregory IX inherits the Cathar resistance. Frustrated by the local bishop's lack of zeal in prosecuting heretics, he turns to the Dominicans, a new order of itinerant friars to serve as his inquisitors. April 20th, 1233, Pope Gregory IX issues a bull that confirms on the Dominicans the specific task of eradicating heresy.
We have therefore determined to send preaching friars against the heretics of France and the adjoining provinces, and we beg, warn, and exhort you to receive them kindly.
The Inquisition is born. Over the next 75 years, it will attempt to completely eradicate the Cathar heresy. But the Cathars are not dead. They have gone underground. By 1308, the Inquisition irrevocably transforms the society of Occitania, changing the Cathars from spiritual reformers to a secret movement, and finally, to a network of hunted fugitives. Word that the good men have returned reaches the Inquisitor of Toulouse, Bernardo Guidonis. An indomitable Dominican who is writing a manual for inquisitors, The Conduct of Inquiry Concerning Heretical Depravity. The manual is a lifelong endeavor. Bernardo Guidonis will become the scourge of Montaillou.
Everything changed for the people of Montaillou in 1308. Until that time, they'd been living in relative obscurity. They'd been allowed to follow their hearts, really, though quietly, when it came to the heresy.
Bernardo Guidona sends his deputies from town to town, house to house, in a sinister investigation to hunt down the Cathars. Not from the region, the Inquisitors are men with no allegiance to friend or family. One truth will dominate the lives of those who follow any belief outside the dictates of the church. They will face the Inquisition. Montaillou, September the 8th, 1308. The events that are about to unfold here will be recorded and preserved for 700 years. In the secret files of the Inquisition. On this September morning, an old man is dying. The Autier brothers have been summoned to save his immortal soul, to console him. The Autier's return has sparked a revival of Catharism in the Pyrenees. The good men are welcomed and sustained by the villagers, but always in secret. To the Cathars, it is enough to be blessed once by a good man, just before death, in an act known as the Consolamentum, to be assured entry into the kingdom of heaven and a seat at Christ's right hand. This forms the rite of passage from the world of matter and corruption toward the heaven of light and spirit. One brief ceremony to replace a lifetime of confession, communion, tithing, pilgrimage, and prayer. When recovery seems impossible, Cathars vow to hasten their salvation by starving themselves to death, a holy and agonizing hunger strike called the Endura. The ceremony takes place in secret. If the Inquisition learns of this ritual, all will be captured and accused of heresy.
The brothers Autier, they are the ones who are responsible for the final resurgence, the final rise and ultimately fall of the Cathar heresy in this region. They're the ones who brought the heresy to Montaillou and could have been the ones to have converted the whole countryside if they'd had a chance.
The last of the good men, the Otier brothers, were ordained during a stay in northern Italy, where Catharism still holds out against the church. From the transcripts of the Inquisition, we know that Pierre and Guillaume Otier had been clerks. They knew the law. They had wives and children. They were rich. One day, Pierre said to his brother, "We have lost our souls." And they concluded, "Let us go in search of our soul's salvation." So they got rid of all their possessions and went to Lombardy, where they became good men. There, they received the power of saving the souls of others. If the generosity of these villagers is discovered, the Inquisition will burn their home to the ground. The good men are fugitives. The Inquisition, their pursuer. September the 8th, 1308, is the Feast of the Nativity of the Virgin Mary, the most important holy day of the year in Montaillou. Even Pierre Maurice comes down from his sheepfold. He does not know it, but this will be his last meal in his native village for more than 15 years. But this year's feast becomes a cataclysm of fear. Before this day is over, everyone in Montaillou will be ensnared in the Inquisition's web of arrest, interrogation, and torture. For the villagers of Montaillou, it is a day of betrayal by the father of their flock.
Pierre Cleric is a fascinating character. As village priest, he, in fact, had quite a lot of influence over the people of Montaillou. Early on, his heart gave way to this heresy, though he continued to preach the Orthodox faith and to defend the heretics.
For the priest and the chatelaine, it is another Sunday to consummate their affair. From the transcript of Beatrice de Planisol.
I asked him, "What shall I do if I become pregnant from you? I will be dishonored and lost." He told me that he had an herb, and if a man carries this herb when he is with a woman, he cannot engender, nor can the woman conceive. After this, when he wished to possess me, he carried something rolled up in a sack, and this thing which he said was an herb hung down between my breasts. It was thus that he united with me, and no other way.
Cleric proclaims that God knows and sees all sins before they are committed, making confession to a mere priest superfluous and making carnal desire a sacred gift.
He told me that I must not confess to another priest the sin that I was committing with him, because it was enough to confess to God.
Cleric is at his most seductive when he is preaching heresy.
He told me that only the good Christians will be saved. He said he had met several of these good men, and they are such people that when one heard them speak, one could never leave them. And if I heard them just one time, I would be theirs forever.
Repeatedly, you hear women in these depositions talking about how Pierre said to them, "You're the only woman in the world whom I love." He said that to Beatrice. He said that to at least a couple of other women. So he focused attention on women.
The priest, of course, himself was considered a perfect one and a leader of the Catharine movement, yet he engaged in sexuality. So he comes on, I think, as a double hypocrite. a hypocrite to Roman Catholicism on the one hand, and a hypocrite with regard to his Cather constituency on the other.
While the lovers entwine, a day of hell descends on Montaigu. The Inquisitors order the entire village sealed off and conduct a house-to-house pursuit of all suspects. Pierre Maury manages to elude the horsemen and bailiffs and disappear into the mountains. Amid the confusion, Guillaume and Pierre Autier slip silently away. Everyone in the village, males over 14, females over 12, is rounded up. Each is summoned to appear before the Inquisition. The priest, Clergue, coordinates the summonses. Even the only noblewoman, Beatrice de Planisol, is served. The first round of interrogations will begin just hours after the daylight ambush. Some villagers are permitted to return to their homes, but with a summons to appear at a later date, to face the charge of heresy and death.
Beatrice, she asked Clergue, why did you do this? Why did you turn against the people whom you loved so much, whom you once defended, whom you once protected from the Inquisition? He answered, because he was losing power. It was the only way to maintain his power in the village.
The Holy Inquisition has come to Montaigu. In just a few hours, the solitude and secrecy of this tiny village have been shattered, replaced by suspicion and fear.
The Inquisitor's zeal was related to this desire to save the souls of heretics. The heretic was misguided. The heretic was going to be condemned to hell. The heretic did not follow the path laid for the individual by the Roman Catholic Church.
The manhunt is relentless. Its mission is to capture and destroy the good men themselves, to prevent the transmission of their teaching, condemned as heresy once and for all, to make this the last generation of Cathars. Bernardo Guidonis reviews the files of his Inquisitor's interrogations of the entire village. But no one reveals the whereabouts of the good men. Pierre Maury remains on the run in the High Pyrenees, bound for Spain and exile. In Montaillou, he can never be safe again. Pierre Clerc smugly goes about his routine. His sexual web enfolds many of the town's women. His wealth and power as cleric and confessor keeps them from betraying his heresy to the Inquisition. Her affair with Pierre Clerc is now over, but like most of the villagers, a file has been opened on the former Chatelaine, Beatrice de Planisol.
In many ways, Beatrice was a modern woman. She had several lovers, including two priests, who she said were the most ardent of lovers, which was important to her, apparently. She was sympathetic to the heresy.
The good men vanish from sight. Guillaume Autier is presumed dead. Early in 1310, 18 months after the raid on Montaillou, an informant betrays the presence of Pierre Autier. As a Cathar good man, he is one of the most valuable prizes of the Inquisition. As he is led to the pyre, Pierre Autier proclaims, "If I only had time, I would convert them all." Some villagers help stoke the fire, if only to prove their loyalty before the Inquisition. By 1320, the rhythms of rural life have resumed for the 40 families of Montaillou. In a society that values honor, those condemned by the Inquisition must wear the yellow cross of shame. Yet the heresy, though diminished, remains alive. Catharism survives only in whispers and the bitter memories of its victims. Few good men are to be seen or hidden. As a new generation of girls falls victim to the depredations of the village priest. Priests with ambition discover that they can make a lucrative career and a name for themselves by enlisting with the Inquisition. One of them is Jacques Fournier, a priest educated in Paris. He is appointed bishop of the region in 1317. After reviewing the files of Bernardo Guidonis on the village of Montaillou 10 years previously, Jacques Fournier smells that the village is still infected. He reopens the Inquisition and summons the weary men and women of Montaillou for yet another round of interrogation. Between 1318 and 1325, Fournier will investigate 98 cases of heresy, and he will conduct 578 interrogations of accused and witnesses. Case by case, house by house, soul by soul, he will tear apart the hidden web of heresy that has enfolded Montaillou for five generations. But Fournier is not merely a crusading zealot. He is a meticulous record keeper obsessed with documenting his place in history. The transcripts of his courtroom sessions provide our richest surviving treasury of medieval life during the Inquisition. To Fournier, the smallest details of everyday life are snares in which he may entrap much larger quarry.
Jacques Fournier urgently wanted to stamp out the heresy. And because of this, he made sure that his scribes wrote down every detail of what the villagers who were being deposed said. He also made sure to question them relentlessly on every aspect of their lives.
Saturday, July 26th, 1320. Fournier issues a citation to the former châtelaine, Beatrice de Planisseau. When she appears before him, he admonishes her that she is suspected of heresy and demands to know if she has had contact with the good men. She admits having met them more than two decades earlier.
I was only 17 years old when I had seen Pierre Rottier exercising his profession as a notary. And in this capacity, he had written the act of sale of an item for my husband, the knight Béranger de Roquefort. I approved this sale by oath, and Pierre wrote up the bill of sale and ratified it. This was 24 years ago or so. He was not reputed to be a heretic at this time.
Fournier commands Beatrice to appear the following Tuesday to testify under oath. Fearful of another encounter with Fournier, Beatrice flees, accompanied by a young priest she has taken as a lover. As they quarrel, they are apprehended by Fournier's men. Jacques Fournier places her under arrest. From the transcript of Beatrice de Planisseau.
I fled out of the fear that I had for my Lord Bishop because of what I had committed in the matter of heresy.
Pierre Clergue, it is a day to strut his piety and to threaten those who know his sins of the flesh, not to utter them. August 1st, 1320. The articles found in the châtelaine's possession at her arrest place her in dire peril with the Inquisition, which now suspects her of witchcraft. Fournier's court reporter describes certain objects strongly suggestive of having been used to cast evil spells, such as two umbilical cords of infants found in her purse, linens soaked with blood, which seemed to be menstrual, a seed of colewort, and seeds of incense slightly burned in a sack of leather, a mirror, and a small knife wrapped in a piece of linen. And a dry piece of bread. Beatrice defends herself, explaining the esoteric items as folk remedies and medicines. Fournier lets the explanations pass, but curiously, he doesn't press her about the dried crust of bread. clear evidence of reverence for the good men. He has a more important target in mind. He sends Beatrice to remand in the tower. This time, there will be no escape. Fournier continues one by one to interrogate the men and women of Montaillou, until finally one young woman shatters the code of silence. Graziade Lizier declares herself innocent of capital treason because her instructor in heretical philosophy has been none other than the village priest himself. Her testimony reveals that Pierre Clergue is not only a lecher, but a Cathar. From the transcript of Graziade Lizier:
"He took my virginity in the Grange, where the straw is stored. He did not do me any violence. He knew me often after then. I did not have a bad conscience that I slept with his priest, because it was pleasing to us, to him and to me."
It was very hard for Fournier to crack the code when it came to Clergue, to prove that he was a heretic, or at least that he was a wayward priest. When Graziade finally spoke about her affair with him, and more importantly, spoke about how he had rationalized the affair to her, how his heretical ideas about sex, about God, about confession, about adultery, this opened the way for Fournier, and he was able to press Beatrice more.
Finally, in her ninth session with Fournier, Beatrice breaks. The Chatelaine corroborates Graziade's portrait of a venal, lying priest. She tells Fournier that she and Pierre Clergue had sex dozens of times, even in the chapel of Montaillou. From the transcript of Beatrice de Planisot:
"I often asked him how he could celebrate Mass after having committed such a sin the preceding night. He replied that the sole valid confession is that which one makes to God, who knows the sin before it is committed, and who alone can absolve it."
To Fournier, it is further evidence of heresy by the priest. Fournier asks if she has heard him say that Christ would judge good and evil in the last judgment.
"He said, we will all come to the judgment of Christ, in which there will be many called and few chosen. And those few chosen would be only the good Christians, and those who were received by them upon their death."
Sunday, March 8th, 1321. The cemetery of Saint-Jean-Martyr near the walls of Pamiers, the most infamous plot of land in the Languedoc during the Fournier persecutions. This is where penitents are taken for public sentencing. Some will be punished with public humiliation, ordered to wear the yellow cross, the badge of shame. Others, like Beatrice, are sentenced to confinement in the wall, to be held in shackles, fed only bread and water. But they are the fortunate ones. Fournier is, in fact, among the most compassionate of Inquisitors. He will burn only 5 people.
After all, in medieval thought, was really not very important. It certainly wasn't important to the Cathars, and it wasn't very important to devout Catholics. It was the soul that was important.
The arrest of Pierre Clerc follows within days. He too is spared the fatal fires, but how he dies, whether by sickness, starvation, or his own hand, we do not know. But we do know that in January 1329, the case of Montaillou's insatiable and treacherous priest is reopened by the Holy Inquisition, and the bones of Pierre Clerc are ordered disinterred, exhumed by the disgraced family with their bare hands, and publicly incinerated as a final act of condemnation and shame. A gruesome death after death, ordained by the Holy Inquisition. After 1 year in the tower, Graside Lisier and Beatrice de Planisol are set free, assigned to wear the yellow crosses as a badge of their heresy and a banner of their pride. In 1327, Fournier becomes a cardinal, and 7 years later, Jacques Fournier achieves his ultimate ambition. He is elected Pope. He takes the name Benedict XII and begins construction of the great Palais des Papes in Avignon. Catharism is dead, the holy faith triumphant.
It's extraordinarily difficult to understand the passion which was felt in this time for life after death and the consequences for life after death of what one does in the present life. And this is one of the reasons why we find it hard to understand the disagreements that sometimes are so passionate and dangerous among religions.
From a spiritual perspective, the issues that the people of medieval Montaillou were grappling with when they were thinking about the heresy had a lot to do with spiritual issues percolating in our lives today, in our world today, specifically the relationship between spirit and flesh, questions of how to be good, questions of why we are here, how we are meant to comport ourselves in this life. What is the relationship between our world now, here, and the world after death? All of these questions that they were entertaining are timeless questions, really.
By 1323, only one Cathar from Montaillou remains at large. The shepherd, Pierre Maury, has been a fugitive for 15 years. What was once the land of the good men now teems with far more enemies than friends. Late one night, Pierre Maury is apprehended, betrayed by a man who had pretended to be a loyal Cathar. Despite his careful record keeping, the judgment that Jacques Fournier passes on Pierre Maury has been lost to history. What fate befalls the shepherd the tower, the fires, or the freedom of the hills, we will never know. Another legacy that Fournier leaves endures long after his death. This legacy is not built of stone. It arises from the transcript of a wandering Jew, a rabbi named Baruch, who becomes trapped in the midst of a terrible pogrom.
The crowd swept through the Fury Quarter when a large number arrived at my house shouting, "To death! To death! Kill all the Jews! Be baptized or we will kill you immediately!" Seeing the fury of these people and that they were killing other Jews who refused to be baptized, I replied that I would prefer to be baptized than to be killed.
Under church law, Baruch is now a Christian. They name him John, but he continues to live as a Jew, which makes him a heretic, subject to the Inquisition. Fournier is fascinated with the case. In 1320, in the midst of his interrogations of the humble Cathars of Montaillou, Fournier spends 59 days in a brilliant and impassioned religious debate with Baruch, attempting to convince the Hebrew of the existence of the Holy Trinity. It is a sublime duel of intellects, but Jacques Fournier holds all the weapons.
Do you wish to live in the future as a Jew or a Christian?
I wish to live as a Jew and not as a Christian, because it does not seem to me that I am a Christian.
When you were baptized, did you consider this baptism valid, or did you wish that it were?
Since I am ignorant of what the Christians believe, and since on the contrary I know my law, if no one can demonstrate to me by my law and the prophets that the faith of the Christians is in agreement with them, then I do not wish to believe or observe Christianity. I prefer to die than to leave Judaism.
In the end, the Inquisitor tires of the exercise. He offers Baruch a simple choice: convert or die. For the next 2 centuries, these 3 words will echo across the Pyrenees.